This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DiFrancesco and Amy Brown for October 13th, 2005. Today we speak with members of tribes affected by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and we talk with Vera Francis of the Passamaquoddy in Maine of the continuing struggle on the location of an LNG terminal in Passamaquoddy Bay on tribal land. Three Native American tribes reside within southern Louisiana, the Biloxi, Chitimacha, the Houma, and the Portachin. All were affected by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita and are struggling to retain their livelihood as well as parts of their culture. The Four Directions Relief Project reports for many communities, government aid has been virtually absent and supplies are only coming from grassroots relief efforts. We have with us today by phone Chairman of the Biloxi Chitimacha Confederation of the Muskies and Randy Verdon and Patty Ferguson, member of an attorney for the Portachin tribe. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hey, Merida, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
First, if we could briefly have some background on the tribes within the Louisiana borders, who they are, where they're located, and a bit of a cultural political perspective, at least from the standpoint of the two tribes that you represent. Do you want to go first, Randy Verdon?
Sure. Basically, I represent three of the four tribes that we're talking with today. I represent three of the Biloxi Chitimacha bands, two of which reside and their communities are in Terrebonne Parish, the third being in Lafourche Parish. A total number of about 2,300 members. By Lafourche band is about 600 members. Grand Cay du Lac's 1,200. And Isle Jean Charles is about 600 as well. The ones that were hardest hit by Rita, the aftermath of Rita and the flooding, were those two that are in Terrebonne Parish, and those were the Grand Cay du Lac and Isle Jean Charles. So you have about 1,800 members in that area. The Bay Lafourche band, which is a little further east, did not receive any flood waters, but they basically got wind damage from Hurricane Katrina.
Great, and we're going to come back to that a little bit more in a second, but I want Patty Ferguson to give a little bit of perspective for the Portachin, the location, how many, and any sort of cultural, political perspective.
Yes, thank you. The Portachin Indian community is in both Terrebonne and Lafourche parishes. It's the Bayou Portachin dissects our community, and we're about, I think, 60 miles southwest of New Orleans. And we're in our historical lands, which are the Chitimacha lands. And we used to live further down the bayou, but because of natural disasters and because of saltwater intrusion and man-made acceleration of the coastline and the Barrier Islands deteriorating.
And that was from the oil, that was from oil exploration?
Oil and gas exploration and canals being built for those reasons. We have had people who've had to move further up to where we live now. We've had people there before, but now everyone, you know, lives there because you can't live further down the bayou because of the salt water. You can't grow crops. You can't have fresh water from a well. So people had to move further up for those reasons. And because some of the land is turning into wetlands, the land that people used to live on that was hard land is now uninhabitable. So we have about 680 members. And at least 400, we estimate, were affected by these two storms.
And how were people affected in Portachin concerning loss of life or loss of homes, that sort of?
We didn't have any loss of life. We have many homes. Our entire community was flooded. So we have some homes that are raised higher than 10 feet, so they were not flooded. But we have other homes, especially a lot of the elders, homes that are on the ground, homes that weren't high enough that were flooded, and they're going to have to do, and we're going to have to do a lot of repair and rebuilding and, you know, try to raise these homes or rebuild those homes that can't be raised, because some of these homes can't be raised because they're built on the ground or they're not sturdy enough to raise them, or they've been through so many hurricanes that, you know, it's not feasible to raise them. And I just want to mention that we've done a lot of oral histories in our community, and people such as my mother and that generation, when they were growing up, they built their houses on the ground. They lived in palmetto houses, and they don't remember any flooding, any extreme flooding from hurricanes. So I think, you know, because of these coastal issues that, you know, and the lack of the barrier, that, you know, we're having more problems with flooding. This flood with Rita brought more water than our community has ever seen. Houses that have never flooded this time. We had at least 9 feet of water in our community.
And can you elaborate on that lack of barrier?
Yes. The Gulf Coast region is protected by barrier islands, and a lot of the barrier islands are being destroyed, and some of the areas where we lived, we grew vegetables, and we had cattle, we had a sugarcane farm, and that land is actually still high, but in between, if you go down the bayou, that's what we call it, when you go down and up, that's our directions, the trees have now turned into skeleton trees. They don't have leaves because of all the saltwater intrusion. There have been canals that have been cut throughout our land for oil exploration and gas exploration. And if you see the aerial photos, you see that they were just cut in every which way, you know, not even trying to save parcels of the land. So, you know, that has created larger canals because they weren't filled up after the exploration, which results in more salt water coming into the area.
And earlier when we were speaking, you were talking about the levees which are being repaired or not repaired, and that some levees were not being repaired that may intrude onto tribal burial grounds.
Right. Well, actually, we have no levee at all. Our community doesn't have a levee, and neither does Ile Jean-Charles, Band of Biloxi, Chittimacha, and they're located right next to us. And there is a project, the Morganza to the Gulf Hurricane Protection Levee Project, and they are proposing not to include the Ile Jean-Charles Indian community in the levee. Their entire community is left out. And our community, it comes to a certain point, but it doesn't include our burial grounds or our sacred sites or culturally specific lands that are important to us.
And your concern is that this could be considered swampland and more open to oil exploration?
Right. I mean, if it's not going to be protected, I think eventually it is going to wash away, because there's been so much introduction of salt water, and these canals that have been built for exploration have grown, they've widened, and we've even had events where they've come in and tried to cut through our burial grounds and, you know, had to try to stop some of these situations. So it is a problem, and we're worried of the impact. We know that there needs to be levees. You know, everyone agrees that there needs to be levees, and in former times, the Mississippi River used to had a different course, and some of the sediment would replace the topsoil in our areas. And not to say that that would be the same today, that it wouldn't change its course, but, you know, all of these things have accelerated the loss of the land and has impacted the people who are living there.
Thank you. Randy Verdon, can you talk about specifically how your tribe was affected and what the need is there and what kind of help, federal or otherwise, you have been seeing?
Well, thus far, we've not really seen any help from the federal government. Although we do have members that have applied personally for relief with FEMA, and I think that's slow in coming as well. So we're waiting to see what's going to happen there, and that's what we've been telling everyone. We have some members that can afford to have homeowners insurance, and we ask them to first use that, and then those that don't, go ahead and apply with FEMA, and then what FEMA cannot provide, then we will do our best to try and secure funds so that we can buy the materials and do the repairs ourselves.
So another fort. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the Four Directions Relief Project has been working on trying to get funds in, and you have had a lot of offers for actual volunteer help to help rebuild. But you want to talk a little bit about that that relief project?
Sure. We're asking people to help as far as donating materials and or gift cards that they can pick up at a Lowe's or Home Depot, and that way shipping is not an issue. And Patty may even talk. You can ask her about the Mennonites that are there in her community helping. And they too, they have the manpower, and they need the supplies. But in any case, just getting back to what you were talking about and asking Patty about the levee systems, it was just good proof that a levee system can protect a community. And in fact, like I said earlier, the Bayou Fouche Band of Blacks and Chittimachas were completely protected. And I guess one reason why there is a levee system around our community in Lafourche is because it was very close to Golden Meadow, which is a white community for the most part. And so we were included as part of that whole area, which goes all the way up to probably include four or five communities, non-Indian communities. And then, like I said, on the other side with Patty, her community, they're completely exposed. So is the Illegion Charles Band. And it just goes to prove that a good levee system can eliminate or at least alleviate a lot of problems that these communities are having. And it's just something that the Corps of Engineers of the federal government, they really have to take a long, hard look at the situation and say, you know, there's something that needs to be done. And Patty mentioned the barrier islands. I mean, that was basically a buffer to help prevent those storm surges. And without that, the coastal erosion, you start losing all the vegetation that holds the land together, and it just continues to fall off. And then now the barrier, which used to be several miles away from your community, is basically in your backyard. So there's nothing to protect you from that force, direct force of the hurricanes.
Have hurricanes had any sort of effects before then? I know there was some displacement perhaps in earlier hurricanes.
There is some, but, it just hadn't been. I think there's been, 25, 30 years that there's been basically a lull in the forces of the hurricanes. These two hurricanes back-to-back, and we were basically caught right in the middle of both of them. And depending on the side you're on, you'll get the winds or the floodwaters. And with Rita, we were on the wrong side because that's what the winds basically come in from the south, which push the water in from the Gulf, and it holds it there for an extended period of time. And that's what happened. And again, like Patty mentioned, our communities are real close, so we know each other's families. That's why we can talk and refer back to each other.
Yeah.
But in any case, she's right. These people, these communities have really not seen the kind of flooding we've had with this, especially Rita, because there's no protection anymore.
Do you, either of you, do you have a fear that that there is displacement that may occur from these hurricanes that could move the tribe apart from each other?
That's a concern that's been going on even before these storms. The Illegion Charles Band, Chief Albert Nakan, and his tribal council, they've been trying to work with the Corps of Engineers to try and have themselves included in the levee system. And they've been going back and forth with that issue. I think there was even some talk with trying to relocate the whole community in a different area further north, which would be further north into the parish, which would be higher ground. But you have all the elderly people that just don't want to leave. That's the land that they were born and raised on, and their grandparents and parents were born and raised, and they have a tie to that land, and they don't want to leave. So it's going to affect the people if they opt to take that route. And I think for the most part, I think someone has a right to hang on towards theirs, especially if the damage, it didn't come naturally. Like Patty said, it was an acceleration, because once they started cutting canals and to bring in the drilling rigs and what have you, when they left the area, those canals should have been filled, and that would have kept the salt water where it was supposed to be, and it would have protected the land, but they didn't. They basically left it vulnerable to what we see happening today.
Can you specify what your needs are right now and how people might be able to plug into the projects that you're working on?
Sure. There's been a need for cleaning supplies with all of the things that they come into the floodwaters. You have all the septic tanks and all those things. You have things that come out of the septic tanks that are become part of the floodwaters, and so there's a lot of sanitation issues and cleaning supplies like Clorox and mops and brushes and those things are very handy, water hoses and those kinds of things with nozzles, so they actually go in and wash the homes out, and they have to do that, do a good cleaning with Clorox 3 or 4 times to really do the job right. So cleaning supplies is one thing, as well as, like I said, the gift cards. And even if gift cards, they can buy cleaning supplies at Home Depot or Lowe's or those places.
So people can send gift cards.
Sure, sure. And Patty can probably give you an address from her end. But if they wanted to send some to the Biloxi Chittimaches, we have a post office address, and it would be BCCM, Inc., P.O. Box 46, Berg, B-O-U-R-G, Louisiana, 70343. Again, that's P.O. Box 46, Berg, Louisiana, 70343.
Great. Thank you. And Patty, what are the needs in your community? You've been working on relief efforts, I think, for all the tribes.
Right. And we have the relief organizations that have assisted us have been Common Ground, and we're working with the Four Directions Project and also National Relief Charities. And other than that, we haven't, had assistance from other organizations, but we're very thankful for those who have assisted us. We are in need of school uniforms for our children. I know people don't think about that, but people lost their uniforms to go to school, and I know the other communities need that also. Basic household items, sheets and towels and linens, things of that nature, cleaning supplies and construction materials, including saws and hammers, plywood, siding, roofing materials, paneling, so that we can help people get their houses back together. Gift cards would also work for us also, if people can assist in the supplies, or even labor if people want to volunteer and come down and help rebuild. We do have, I forgot to mention, we do have the Mennonites in our community who said if we can get the supplies that they will help us rebuild, so that we're very thankful for that. And they have brought us mattresses because people were sleeping outside in their cars and or on top of their cars because it smells so bad inside and outside, but they can't sleep inside. So they did bring some mattresses, so I know that people were thankful for that. So any items that you may not even think of, small appliances or a lot of building supplies would be helpful to us, so we can get the recovery effort underway.
Okay, and the website that would be good for people to visit if they wish is theintuitivepath.org/relief. Is that a good one to direct people to?
Yes, for the four directions, yes, that's good.
Great.
They have all of our they have all of our contact information on there for our tribes.
Great. Any last comments, Randy Verdon?
Well, I was gonna add and echo what Patty just mentioned. When you drive through the communities, you see all of the appliances and all of the furnishings, couches and mattresses and stoves and refrigerators. All those things are on the street because they have to be discarded. So all those things are going to have to be replaced. So, it's not just roofing material. You know, it's basically the whole contents of people's homes. And Patty brought up another good point, clothes and uniforms. And just everything has been basically... had to be discarded and thrown away because it's of no use anymore. It's just damaged, So I appreciate Patty bringing that up because it kind of slipped my mind, but you just have to go through the community and see what kind of effect it's had on the people and their livelihood,
Well, thank you both for joining us. I'm sorry we have no more time left for today, but we've been speaking with Randy Verdon, the chairman of the Biloxi Chitmacha, and Patty Ferguson, a member and attorney for the Potoshen tribe, both in southern Louisiana. And to find out more information, the contact information for the individual tribes and also for the Four Directions Relief Project, you can go to the website is intuitivepath.org/relief.html, or you can search on Four Directions Relief Project. Thank you to you both for joining us here today.
Thank you, Meredith.
Here in Maine, the struggles of tribes and energy companies are not absent. It has been almost a year and a half since the limited liability corporation Quaddy Bay was created to develop import and storage facilities on Passamaquoddy tribal land where the Sepayuk Band resides at Pleasant Point. Though the Passamaquoddy representative to the state legislature originally brokered the deal and the governor and most of the tribal council at Pleasant Point said they supported the project, fierce resistance came from within the tribal membership and from surrounding towns fearing the impacts on safety, environment, fishing, tourism, and a way of life. As plans and proposals have shifted, there are four proposals for terminals and tanks throughout Passamaquoddy Bay. We spoke briefly with Vera Francis of We Protect Our Homeland, a member of the Passamaquoddy tribe at Pleasant Point, and we will continue our discussion with her again next week. Give an update, if you will, a reorientation of how things stand with the Passamaquoddy and the now multiple liquefied natural gas terminal proposals that are in Passamaquoddy Bay and how the Three Nation Alliance has been dealing with this as of late.
Well, I can speak for the We Protect Our Homeland group more directly as to our position and our response. And a lot's happened in a year's time, obviously, including Quaddy Bay LLC. We now have Down East LNG, and most recently BP Consultant LLC. And perhaps today I'll speak more directly to BP Consultant LLC as it does involve our tribal representative and another state, main state representative, Harold Ian Emery, who I believe is a Republican out of Cutler. And I know folks have been hearing a whole lot about Washington County in a larger sense, but I think that Washington County's economic condition will obviously not be determined, I believe that Washington County's economic condition will be determined by its degree of poverty, and not in the usual sense, I don't believe. I think it's not what is missing from our lives there. It's what's absent in our political landscape, and that's obviously fair play and leadership. I think, as we mentioned, there is a high concentration of energy speculators vying for access to Passamaquoddy Bay as we speak. But what is really going on in Washington County, and who cares to know? In late August, the Calais City Council apparently passed a resolution supporting the development of a liquefied natural gas terminal within the city limits of Calais. They took their cue from BP Consultant LLC developers. And once again, those are Maine State representatives, Fred Moore Jr. and Harold Ian Emery. They promise, apparently, that LNG will be locally controlled and owned. They promise to provide 50 jobs. But they also reiterate that this has nothing to do with their elected positions. I disagree. I think it has everything to do with their positions because they only promised an idea. The Calais City Councilman unanimously voted to support Moore and Emery's concept of a plan. They didn't have an actual proposal. They still do not have a business plan that they've made available to the public. And in fact, they're not even disclosing who their partners are. That's beyond Moore and Emery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's what I'm wondering, is where is BP's consultant LLC's actual proposal and business plan? Perhaps when Maine's leadership requires more than mere gestures of community support, like the one that Calais initiated back in August, will, you know, require more than community support to determine whether or not sites are suitable. And that's, you know, not being factored into the analysis.
Now, next week, you're working on coming forth with an announcement of some further actions on your part. We'll have you on Radioactive then. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that might be?
Right. Next week, we'll make some announcements concerning our current struggle with Quaddy Bay LLC and their claim to have a land lease for their proposed LNG terminal in Passamaquoddy territory and within Passamaquoddy ancestral waters.
And we'll be going into the issue, obviously, a lot more next week. But again, any conclusionary remarks about where the Passamaquoddy We Protect Our Homeland stands on the issue of LNG development on tribal land?
Well, our position remains the same, in that Passamaquoddy Bay is one bay. Passamaquoddy Bay is ancestral waters of the Passamaquoddy people, Passamaquoddy coastal people, and we stand firm on defending and protecting our land rights and our access to the water. Long before LNG speculators began arriving on our shores, Passamaquoddy Bay was, as it remains to be true today, an inappropriate site for heavy industrial development. That stands as our position.
And I understand from the last reports in earlier this month that FERC is acknowledging that if Canada decides that they don't want LNG tankers coming through Canadian water, that that could indeed stop any LNG development projects.
Well, that's the truth. It happened before, and it can happen again.
In Eastport, it happened a number of years ago.
With the Pittston project, yes. Canada is in a position to stop this. Canada is also in a position to protect Passamaquoddy ancestral waters. There are Passamaquoddies on our reserve as well as in St. Andrews. And I'm speaking of the Passamaquoddies that are coastal peoples. Canada also has an obligation to protect ancestral waters.
Great. We look forward to talking to you again next week, Vera Francis, with We Protect Our Homeland, a Passamaquoddy member of SPIAC. Thank you.
Thanks, Meredith.
For more information, you can go to savepassamaquoddybay.org. Screenings of A Silent Forest, The Growing Threat of Genetically Engineered Trees, followed by a panel discussion with the national and international coordinators of Stop GE Trees campaign, Oren Langell and Peterman, who we had on our program last week, will be tonight at College of the Atlantic, 7 p.m. at the Turrets, tomorrow at the University of Maine at 3 p.m., Friday night at 7 p.m. at the Blue Hill Town Hall. You can check their website at gefreemaine.org. You've been listening to Radio Active, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support. You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@mainindymedia.org. Listen to archive programs on our website, radioactivenews.org. Thanks for listening and acting, and join us again next Thursday. ¶¶